On this week in Enterprise Tech, Mr. Brian Chi and Mr. Curtis Franklin are back on the show. The use of MFA has doubled since 2020, but the question is it enough? Plus, our guest today, Todd Johnson, Managing Director of Nexer Group, he's going to talk about the market response to OpenAI, ChatGPT, and Copilot. Lots more there as well. So definitely shouldn't miss it. Quiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 548, recorded June 16th, 2023. Encrypted Christmas Ornaments. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Lookout. Whether on a device or in the cloud, your business data is always on the move. Minimize risk, increase visibility, and ensure compliance with Lookout's unified platform. Visit lookout.com today. And by ACI Learning. CIOs and CISOs agree that attracting and retaining talent is critical. With an average completion rate of over 80%, your team deserves the entertaining and cutting-edge training they want. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit for more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team. And by Thinks Canary, because thousands of ignored alerts help nobody get one alert that matters. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit. Enter the code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Moreski, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But you know what? I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals and the experts. He's principal analyst at MD and the man who has the pulse of the enterprise. He's our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, welcome back to the show. How are you doing this week?
Doing pretty well, Lou. Happy to be here. It's been a busy week. One of the things I did was put up an article on dark reading. I looked at some of the free offerings that are out there for learning cybersecurity and just what people could expect to get from those. That can be checked out over at darkreading.com. And I'm working on some bigger reports and I'm starting to get ready for Black Hat USA and DEF CON. It's amazing how fast that's coming up and got some interesting stuff going on. I'm going to be speaking at the Omdia Analyst Summit on Tuesday, and then I'm going to be planning to spend a bunch of time at the AI Village at DEF CON, where there's going to be some generative AI hacking going on, and looking forward to seeing what people can do with that.
Sounds fun. I've been spending my days doing generative AI hacking, so that sounds like a lot of fun. I feel like I should find a way to get there. I don't know.
You absolutely should. I tell you what, I will get you a reporter's notebook and a pencil to take into DEF CON, and first beer's on me.
That's good. Thanks, Curtis. It was great having you back. Well, we also have to welcome back our very own network geek, Mr. Brian Chi. Again, he's always cooking something up. What are you cooking up this week, Chibert?
I actually spent some great days at Infocom over in the Orlando Convention Center. The cool thing is I had a great conversation with Catherine Nin. She is the, I can't remember her title, but anyway, she concentrates on end user relations rather than a lot of companies saying, okay, we're going to concentrate on the resellers. And she and I had a really great conversation. She's a big audio video geek. She got started in the recording industry, and she and I are talking and we're thinking, gee, this would be a lot of fun to do a case study or a white paper on integration of Synology NASes with their various add-ins and the bright sign for digital signage. Cause a lot of people there is an entire section of Infocom dedicated to digital signage, and having something that's a little more turnkey without having to spend a ton of money sounds like a great way for small to medium sized companies to get more into digital signage. So ought to be fun. Anyway, lots of things happening, and I would love to hear your comments. And oh, by the way, chat room, there actually is a restaurant called Cheeburger. And one of my students, when he was traveling through an airport, managed to find it and took a picture of it. I will try and find it for the next episode. Y'all take care.
Well, speaking of lots of things happening, there's a lot of things happening in the enterprise for sure. In fact, the use of MFA actually doubled since 2020. We know why, but we'll talk about if it's actually making a dent. Plus, our guest today is Todd Johnson, he's managing director of Nexer Group. He's going to talk about the market response to OpenAI, ChatGPT, Copilot, and so much more. So lots to talk about, so definitely stick around. But first, like we always do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. Cybersecurity firm Mandiant has reported a significant cyber espionage campaign believed to be the largest by a China-linked threat actor since the infamous Microsoft Exchange exploit in 2021. The hackers reportedly exploited a software vulnerability in Barracuda Network's email security gateway, affecting hundreds of public and private sector organizations worldwide, a third of which are government agencies. Mandiant noted that the breach, thought to have commenced as early as last October, involved sending emails with malicious attachments to compromise targeted organizations' data and systems. Interestingly, most of the affected entities who were located in the Americas, which the cybersecurity company says may reflect Barracuda's customer demographics. Now, the California-based Barracuda Networks had previously acknowledged the breach on June 6th, advising full replacement of the compromised appliances. Despite releasing containment and remediation patches, the hackers identified as UNC4841 altered their malware to maintain access. In a recent update, Barracuda reported that roughly 5% of its active email security gateway appliances showed signs of potential compromise, and they're providing replacements to affected customers free of charge. The latest breach comes amidst rising tensions between the U.S. and China, with each accusing the other of espionage activities.
So last week here on Twiat, we told you about a zero-day vulnerability exploit for MOVEit, a file transfer program frequently used by large enterprise customers and government agencies. We weren't kidding. This week, according to CNN, 3.5 million Oregonians' records and more than 6 million records in Louisiana have been compromised through, you guess it, the MOVE IT exploit. According to consulting group Aon, files related to a, quote, select number of our clients, end quote, were accessed by hackers in the MOVEit breach as well. Other big corporations, including the BBC and British Airways, and universities like the University of Georgia up in Athens, have also been impacted by the breach. Now, while details about the breaches are still thin, the data exposed in the breach of the Oregon and Louisiana Motor Vehicles Departments may include Social Security numbers and driver's license numbers, a fact that's prompted state authorities to advise their residents on how they can protect themselves from identity fraud. Now, if you'll recall, when we told you about this last week, we said it was new enough that there were no patches. That's changed, and now the U.S. cybersecurity officials have ordered federal agencies to apply updates from Progress Software, that's the publisher of MOVEit, but the recovery process was complicated yesterday by the discovery of a fresh vulnerability in the software that the company is, we're going to assume, working overtime to fix. Right now, the hackers, who appear to be from the Russian Klopp Group, appear to be focusing their extortion demands on companies that may pay, adding alleged victims to their dark website to pressure them. According to one person with direct knowledge of negotiations between Klopp and its victims, the hackers have in one case asked for more than $100 million from a corporate victim. Now, they're not going to get it, but that's a sign that the group is being aggressive both with the campaign and their demands, and that we're going to hear a lot more about this before the whole MOVEit vulnerability saga is finished.
So Ars Technica posted this story and kind of hits a close to home for me. The science publication Nature. So this last Wednesday, the scientific journal Nature announced in an editorial that will not publish images or video created using generative AI tools. The ban comes amid the publication's concerns over research integrity consent, privacy, and intellectual property protection as generative AI tools increasingly permeate the world of science and art. Okay, so this is my rebuttal to this. While I greatly respect the publication, I'd like to present the other side of the coin. In science, the visualization of concept goes a very long way to helping people understand what can be some amazingly complex concepts. To that end, a considerable amount of grant money is spent with artists imagining what something might look like or creating a clearer image from what is all too often an overly busy photograph. My argument is that AI used as a tool can make scientific illustrations more affordable and accessible to more scientists. This kind of attitude strikes to how science publications are publishing the works of others and charging huge amounts of money for the privilege of publishing. The academic world encourages this by demanding publication of research in the old publish or perish trope. My question is, what makes AI-generated illustrations different from an illustrator imagining what, say, a quark looks like after exiting a collision in a super collider? You certainly can't get a good photograph of it, and that image is only a concept of what it might look like. So what's the difference if more of an AI created the concept? Making scientific illustrations more accessible could mean better and more illustrations. I do agree that though that just like human-generated concept illustrations, those generated by AI should be scrutinized for accuracy the same as human-generated art already is.
Rising tensions between China and the U.S. have raised concerns over Chinese-owned technologies, in particular encryption chips, sold by company subsidiaries flagged by the U.S. Department of Commerce, have found their way into Western military and intelligence networks. Now, let's dive into the details. Hulan Microelectronics, a Chinese encryption chip manufacturer, was added to the Commerce Department's entity list in 2021 for its ties to the Chinese military. Surprisingly, its subsidiary, Initio, is still supplying encryption chips to Western manufacturers of encrypted hard drives with customers including NASA, NATO, and the U.S. and U.K. militaries. Surprising here. Now, it seems the Commerce Department's warning didn't reach these chips' actual customers. Ambiguities in Initio's branding and Taiwanese origin prior to its acquisition by Hulan may have contributed to this confusion. Security researchers and national security analysts worry that these chips may have hidden back doors, enabling the Chinese government to decrypt Western agency information. While no backdoor has been discovered, researchers caution that detecting one would be virtually impossible. The entity list, that export control list, prohibits U.S. organizations from exporting components to listed companies. Now, it serves a warning for U.S. customers, too. When approached for comments, the Commerce Department stated that affiliation with an entity list party should be considered a red flag. Now, Hulan didn't respond, but Initio denies setting any back doors. Of course, they did. Now, let's look at the companies using these chips. A company called iStorage, a UK-based hard drive maker, claims its architecture eliminates the need to trust Hulan or Initio. However, experts argue that even without storing the key, the bridge controller chip still has enough access to potentially enable a backdoor. Security researcher Matthias Dieck found vulnerabilities in Verbatim's USB thumb drive using Initio's chip. Although Initio claims to have addressed them, Dieck highlighted the lack of transparency in firmware analysis. Now, this suggests that the uncovering a hardware-based backdoor in the chips would be challenging. The presence of Hulan's Initio chips in Western military intelligence networks highlights the challenges in securing hardware supply chains. Vigilance and scrutiny are crucial, especially with companies flagged by the Commerce Department. Now, the potential for hidden vulnerabilities or backdoors poses a significant risk, and experts call for the thorough assessments and transparency. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the News Bites, but before we get to the News Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Lookout. Now, business has changed forever. Boundaries to where we work or even how we work have literally disappeared. Whether on a device, in the cloud, across networks, or at a local coffee shop, your data is always on the move. Now, while that's a great for your workforce, it's really a challenge for IT security. Lookout helps you control your data and free your workforce. With Lookout, you gain complete visibility into your data, minimize risk from external and internal threats, and ensure that you have compliance. By seamlessly securing hybrid work, your organization doesn't have to sacrifice productivity for security. And Lookout makes IT security a lot simpler. In fact, working with multi-point solutions and legacy tools, it's in today's environment is just too complex. With its single unified Lookout platform, it reduces IT complexity, giving you more time to focus on whatever else comes your way. Good data protection isn't a cage. It's a springboard, letting you and your organization be bound toward the future of your making. Visit lookout.com today to learn how to safeguard data, secure hybrid work, and reduce IT complexity. That's lookout.com. And we thank Lookout for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the news bites. Now, this week, Okta unveiled its International Secure Sign-In Trends Report. Now, my guess here is that you might not fully be surprised by the thing that actually unveiled here. Now, the report sheds light on workforce customer logins across various industries worldwide. In fact, according to the report, the adoption of MFA, multi-factor authentication, has nearly doubled since 2022, providing really an extra layer of security alongside passwords. Now, we kind of knew that would happen since remote and hybrid work has really become the new norm. Now, most notably, phishing resistance authenticators have hailed as the top choice, striking the right balance between security and user convenience. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about user convenience in just a moment. Now, by sharing data on MFA and passwordless adoption, Okta aims to drive progress and collaboration among governments, partners, and customers. Now here's some key findings. Now, the report says 90% of Okta administrators and 64% of users utilized MFA in January 2023, with Okta FastPass and FIDO2 WebAuthn standing out as the most phishing-resistant and user-friendly sign-in methods. Now, the technology industry leads the charge towards a passwordless future, with 87% of account logins already utilizing MFA. That's pretty good. However, highly regulated industries are lagging behind. It's worth noting that the MFA adoption by Okta's workforce customers jumped from 35% to 50% within just 2 months between February and March 2020. And surprisingly, a smaller organization with fewer than 300 employees boasted a higher number of MFA adoptions, 79%, rather than larger enterprise organizations of over 20,000 employees, which is only at 54%. We'll talk about why that might be. Now, MFA plays a critical role into protecting against cyber threats. We know this, as a significant percentage of attacks stem from stolen username and passwords. However, the rise of that sophisticated MFA bypass attack necessitates a focus on those phishing-resistant authentication methods. Now, the Secure Sign-In Trends report reveals that technologies like Okta FastPass, FIDO2 offer the best blend of security and user experience. Now, I want to bring my co-host back in because obviously this report talks about a little bit of trends that we kind of knew were happening. Obviously, the fact that remote work is pushing the passwordless world to secure things more. However, I thought it was really interesting when they said that enterprises were slower to adopt. Curtis, I want to throw this to you first, because obviously you cover the enterprise often. Why are enterprises slower?
Well, I think the big reason that enterprises are slower is because they have so many more endpoints to protect. They have so many more users. They have so many more roles that those users fill. And every time you have a role, a sign-in, a user, you have costs that's associated not only with adding the actual service software or hardware, but in training the users to use it. And you know, absolutely ironclad know, that in the first 6 to 12 months after you go to something like this, the calls to your tech support line are going to skyrocket. People are going to forget their tokens. I left my phone at home. I left my token in my pants that I sent to the dry cleaner. The dry cleaner ran my token through their process in the pants. Is it still good? Yeah, there are going to be all kinds of things. And every time someone calls tech support, there's a hard dollar cost to that. So all of that bundled up is why the enterprise is taking longer. And they're balancing that against the cost of breaches. And here's where it gets complicated. because after you recognize a risk, you can do three things, one of three things. You can accept the risk, you can mitigate the risk, or you can transfer the risk. That transferring the risk is what insurance is all about. And so a lot of companies are looking at which of those three options is financially best for them. And in a lot of cases, they're deciding that accepting the risk is the best option. And many would love to transfer the risk. Fortunately, for all of us who actually like security, a lot of the insurers are insisting that companies do things like have multi-factor authentication before they'll go through the underwriting process. So it's complicated. It's shifting. And I think that this is one of those cases where, especially in the enterprise space, if they do this survey again in a year, we're going to see a significantly greater acceptance because a lot of forces are converging here.
Right. And the report highlights, obviously, the effectiveness that we've seen from phishing-resistant authenticators. Now, I'm curious, Cheever, you've obviously used a bunch of these and adopted maybe some of the, you've used it in the old technology, even the new technology. How they've improved, and what's some good ones?
Let's be right up front. I don't believe any single corporation's view of the world. So when we're looking through this bite, I went and go, okay, do other corporations, do other organizations also agree? And I'll be right up front. Duo is one of our TWIT sponsors, and I happen to use Duo. I've gone through the MFA requirement and the retraining at the University of Hawaii. I now use Duo for almost all my MFA, but every once in a while, I have a device or a server that is more sensitive than others, and for that, I use YubiKey. So in the show notes, I've put in the Duo Trusted Access Report, and I've also put in the YubiKo article on the same thing. Both corporations, both organizations agree with what Okta is publishing. So that's pretty cool. I also agree with Kurt. When we first went and we were forced to use MFA at the University of Hawaii, the number of support calls absolutely skyrocketed. And you would think, okay, maybe student. No, it was the PhDs. Our faculty just went absolutely nuts. So there's lots and lots of retraining, but the number of incidents dropped like a rock. People losing their, getting hacked and so forth, way down. So I think it's very worthwhile. And then there's also a group at the university that was working on how to use the centralized authentication system that the IT group at UH had, so that you could also use the same authentication systems for internal websites, internal mail, network attached storage, and so forth. I think that's actually going to be one of the things that is going to make a difference in MFA more than anything else. It's where are and how are the back-end tools going to provide those hooks for MFA? When those tools are difficult to use, you're going to have the smaller organizations say, oh, maybe passwords are just good enough. Because development costs are something that's almost never in the budget for grants, research groups, and so forth. So I think FIDO and their efforts, especially because it's all open source, is going to make a huge difference. And they're certainly better than those old keyring dongles that I used to have to carry around that would display a six-digit number on it every 30 seconds. I had a whole bunch of them, and I actually gave them to one of my old students to use as Christmas tree ornaments after all the batteries died.
It's good use of them, that's for sure. Now, I'll tell you, I've worked with organizations who I've actually seen this like actually happen in real time, where they enabled proof of presence and MFA like that week for code reviews, service deployments, document reviews. And I tell you, it caused havoc. Like, I saw lots of angry emails, lots of Slack messages at the time the organization used Slack. You know, people like running into problems, they couldn't access things. So I would say, you know, in this case, it's a big deal. Like, it's definitely a big deal when you enable these things, which is probably why there's slow adoption. But Kurt, I wanted to throw it back to you because obviously, you know, the user experience is an important thing, right?
It is. And to me, that was one of the most interesting things about this report, as it was reported there. It said that the MFA methods that were being used and that were the most secure also offer the most consistent and fastest user experience. And I think that's important because one of the things that users hate is what I like to call transactional friction. In other words, anything that slows down the process of logging in, or, you know, Lou, looking at your world, anything that slows a user down when they're just trying to enter data or get a basic job done is bad. User interface people love to minimize friction. And so that's been one of the classic arguments against multi-factor authentication. It adds significant friction for sometimes modest security benefit. In this case, they're showing that they're adding a non-trivial security benefit and making the user experience better. That's the kind of combination that's going to really speed up the adoption of multi-factor authentication.
Now, it's pretty interesting because obviously there's no MFA that rules them all. In fact, some of them are a lot less secure than others. In fact, some of them are a lot easier to adopt than others, but are a lot less secure. In fact, SMS-based MFA, it has a bunch of vulnerability attacks that are out there, whether it's encryption issues, risk of SS7 attacks, social engineering, SIM swapping. So there's lots of reasons why not to use SMS-based, but it is one of the easiest to set up. Now, Chibrit, there are some other technologies out there, some other advancements that are happening that are making things easier, right?
Well, as far as, reducing friction, I just got a notice from Apple saying in iOS 17, those so-called SMS codes for multi-factor authentication, they're now going to implement an option that you can opt into. It's not something that's automatic. You have to opt in, but it will auto-delete those SMS MFA codes. So that means they're not hanging around. You know, a lot of people just use it and then forget about it. So that means you're going to have an SMS thread with all these different six character codes just stringing along out forever over a long period of time. And that's a tool that hackers can use to try and, reverse engineer the pattern. So that's going to be really cool. I personally think until we can get to a true passwordless world, a strong password vault. I happen to use Bitwarden. And I am moving towards moving to Bitwarden, but with a dongle, probably a YubiKey. I'm actually working out those issues on how much pain am I willing to go through for that. But YubiKey seems to have some good stuff. And maybe if a combination of a USB-C and the NFC for my iPhone might not be a bad way of going. We'll see. But I do like the concept of dongles. And now that folks like YubiKey and really dropped the price on them, I see the pins slowly dropping, all the things in the way. As corporations and organizations and developers come up with new ideas on how to reduce the friction, but also keep the security going, I think that bodes really well for the health of the internet. Because truthfully, I was getting to the point of, gee, if we can't trust our communications and our transactions on the internet, does that mean the internet is slowly going to die? I think the answer is, I hope not. And I hope this whole someday passwordless and zero trust environment might make it safe to come out and do e-commerce again. Who knows?
passwordless world is definitely coming. In fact, Bitwarden is a sponsor and we do use it here on Twit, but I can tell you it's a great option for any organization. However, you know, obviously these other hardware based keys and other solutions are also useful. I tell you, over time, you definitely get used to them and you definitely make really good use of, you know, it makes really good use of your time. In fact, you feel a little bit better about things knowing that your account can't be compromised, even if you're typing your old password in somewhere. So I can definitely tell you, you know, although it's a little bit of a tax that you pay up front, it's definitely a long-term benefit. So definitely check that out. Well, folks, that does it for the Bytes. Next up, we have our guest. But before we get to our guest, we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech, and that's ACI Learning. Thanks to ACI Learning, the days of boring, archaic training methods are finally over. Thank goodness. The lack of meaningful impact shows up as low engagement, which translates to suboptimal performance. You and your team deserve to be entertained while you should be trained and be empowered to keep your organization safe and secure. It's simple. If your IT training isn't raising your team to the level you aspire to be, you need ACI Learning. Now, while the training industry's completion rate is barely 30%, ACI Learning blows its competitors out of the water with an 80% completion rate. That's amazing. Now, this is the format that IT professionals really want. In today's IT talent shortage, whether you operate as your own department or part of a larger team, your skills must be at a bare minimum up to date. 94% of CIOs and CISOs agree that attracting and retaining talent is increasingly critical to their roles. Now, ACI Learning helps you retain your team and trust them to thrive while investing in the security of your business. Keeps your skills up to date with over 7,000 hours of content available and new episodes added daily. Now, your enterprise needs cohesive, cutting-edge training to keep your team compliant and ahead of the pack. Choose an existing course, let ACI Learning combine modules for a tailored solution, or let them custom design a course to address your specific needs. ACI Learning's private bootcamp will train your team alongside the most passionate and best subject matter experts certified in the latest version of each certification. Full access to advanced reporting via ACI Learning's Pro Portal. You can track and manage your team's results. In fact, manage seats. You can assign unassigned team members for customized courses relevant to their position and access monthly progress usage reports. Visual reports provide immediate insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period. ACI Learning's trained thousands of aspiring tech and cyber professionals annually, including providing scholarships to individuals from diverse backgrounds and those transitioning out of military service into civilian careers. Join the always-on tech training solution. In a rapidly changing world of technology, ACI Learning is in the studio every day to record and share relevant content that impacts your business. Be bold, train smart. Learn more about ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness at go.acilearning.com/twit. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at 5 seats. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit for more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team. And we thank ACI Learning, their support of this week in enterprise tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the TWIRI. And today we have Todd Johnson, he's managing director of Nexer Group. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hey, everyone, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into the thick of it, our audience is a complete spectrum of experience, whether it's entry-level people all the way up to CISOs and CTOs, and they love to hear people's origin stories. So maybe take us through a journey through tech and what brought you to Nexer.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm still very much a geek at heart, proudly. You know, so it feels like I've landed in the right spot here today. So, engineering background, computer science and electrical engineering. Early in my career, you know, I wrote code for a living, you know, so I was very happy to, sit in a dark room and slice pizza underneath it, you know, 2 meter now and again, write code all day. That was fantastic. At some point though, I figured out I really liked understanding, a bit more about, what my code is being used for. So I got in consulting, very early in my career. So I spent about 10 years at Microsoft, Way back when, I'll date myself, but that was around the time Windows 3.0 was a big deal, right? At the time. So about 10 years there, and then I was part of the group from Microsoft that went and started a joint venture with Accenture, a company called Avanade. So Avanade was very much a startup experience for me. They're probably 50,000-60,000 employees today. So I guess that worked out okay. Spent about 13 years there. While I was there, what I really discovered is that I really like building these teams. Having the ability to put together the right mix of technologists and everything you need to go help clients. So I've done that for a number of different Microsoft partners, and the latest being Nexer. So I've been doing that for going on a couple. We started planning a couple of years ago, and then we got operational here in the US about a year ago.
Fantastic. Now, before we get into all of it, the audience needs to know a little bit about the company. So maybe give me a quick summary of what Nexer does.
Yeah, I'm sure, here in the U.S., no one's heard of us. That's okay. You will soon. And, hopefully after this, we'll get a little more word out there. Right. So the company's actually been around. The origins go back 30 plus years. The company's headquartered in Sweden. Grew there in Europe. It's been the last couple of years that, we've gone on a path to a little more global expansion. So today the company is about just under 3,000 employees. We're in 15 countries, some pretty interesting spots. I get to travel now and again, some pretty interesting locations. We're pretty new to the U.S. And so we saw a gap in the market here in the U.S. And that's why I'm here. And that's why we're starting to grow the business, here in the United States. As far as what we do, I missed that. We're very much a Microsoft partner. So my part of the business is all around what we call business applications. So what people typically think about is ERP and CRM solutions, but we cover the whole Microsoft stack of solutions.
Great. Now, obviously, we've noticed that there's lots of organizations, especially there's the last couple of years, that are digitally transforming. They're trying to move solutions to the cloud. They're growing. And usually when organizations grow, that means they need new tools and they need to support different teams and different portions of their organization. And of course, with new tools becomes new system requirements. And I think it's almost a balancing act, more policies, more things happening, more integrations. What's an organization to do here?
Yeah, and it's tricky, right? I mean, yeah. And we deal with a lot of clients that have, you have a lot of legacy information, legacy data out there. Technical debt is real, right? And do all that. So a lot of what we try to help our clients, understand and figure out is, where they can have the best impact on their business, right? We're talking about AI all the time these days, but it's still, on that digital transformation, roadmap. So we're really looking where, okay, what's the best bang for your buck in terms of, where you're going to have the most impact on your business. A lot of what we're really focused on are, these core business systems, right? I mean, these are the things that, you truly run your business on, which means they're, they're very mission critical. So like, if they don't work, then, the factory line stops, things like that. But we really try to help customers understand where they can make their dollar go the furthest and get the biggest impact and get on the right platform, from here on out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, obviously, I've worked in the development organizations of ERP and CRM. So I can tell you that obviously the realm of business software, it can be a complete spectrum. You have legacy versions of things, you have newer versions of things. And sometimes the legacy versions, let's say SAP or something older, sometimes the provider won't support it anymore. And so organizations are highly dependent on it. They have lots of customizations on these systems, and bringing them to the cloud or maybe even moving them somewhere to make it more useful is very complex and expensive. What do you see organizations doing in this type of case?
Yeah, and it's always, we try to coach our customers. Customizations are sometimes a necessary evil. We try to avoid them if at all possible, just because it can become one of those things that's a technical debt that holds you back. And so a lot of times it's really trying to understand, is it really a migration or really is it better looking at, just a brand new implementation? Right. Sometimes these things are, are you running your business processes, that way because that's the way you want to? Or it's because, that's the way it always worked. And so that's the way we've always did it, right? So, it's a matter of finding that right balancing act of, okay, what process makes sense to change? You know, how we bring that, you know, forward into, you know, a new technical platform, you know, or in some cases it's okay, you know, maybe we start with a blank slate and say, okay, if you're redoing this, you know, what's the right way to do it? Right. And sometimes that actually can be a quicker path.
I mean, obviously a lot of these systems out there today, they kind of focus on the fact that you want to essentially hand roll your own IT organization. And I think that makes it more complex because now you're bringing together all these different disparate systems and trying to integrate them together. However, is there an advantage to doing that?
You know, I think it's gotten easier, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, a lot of businesses that, you know, they don't want to be in the IT business, right? You know, they want to, you know, they make specialty fabric, you know, I mean, and that's their business. And so the IT piece, they need it to, you know, to run their business. And then that's where, you know, we really try to help them, these SaaS tools make it easier to do that, right? You know, you don't necessarily have to, take all that deep expertise in the house. And again, that's where we try to keep, if you stay away from customizations, it's a little easier to do that.
Right. Now, obviously I work for Microsoft and I know about the Microsoft Partner Program, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about what that program is. How does it help your customers?
Yeah. And it's changed a lot over the last couple of years. Right. And you know, for us and for our clients, I think it gives clients a better idea of what firms are considering working with or really capable of. It's a lot harder to be at the top of the food chain these days in the Microsoft partner organization. You know, the requirements and the investment that you have to make, you know, to get all those qualifications, has gotten, you know, that bar's been raised much higher. So I think it's actually much more meaningful than it used to be. And also it's a little more, it used to be much more technical focused, you know, which is great for a while, but it kind of forced clients to kind of think like an SI, and they don't want to be an SI. So it's much more, solutions focused. It's a little more SaaS focused. And so, you know, it gives, when I go talk to a new client, a new prospect, you know, they've got some confidence, you know, about, you know, what our capabilities are, you know, based on that, because it's a hard bar to get over.
Right. Now you know, obviously there's lots of, you talked about a little bit in the beginning, obviously the fact that OpenAI and ChatGPT are kind of being integrated into the pipeline. How is things changing because of this?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's actually gotten more attention faster than I would have expected. I mean, as a geek, I think, it's exciting. It's cool. But from our clients, that's actually gotten, some quick attention, as well. And we've already, you know, I've got one example where, that wasn't the only factor in their decision, but that was a big part of it in terms of, you know, they're making decisions on what their ERP platform is going to be. Right. And you don't change ERP platforms all that often. So this is like a once every 8 to 10 year kind of a discussion. Right. And so this particular client, you know, they looked at it and they're like, okay, you know, that's stuff that we want. So we want to bet on that because, you know, we know there's things in there that are going to make our life easier. And that's what we're looking for. Even though, you know, am I going to get that to them this summer? Yeah, maybe not. But it's pretty, you know, it's pretty soon, actually. So.
Yeah, hopefully things will get better. I think that obviously the concept of AI helping businesses can really, especially in the case of ERP, obviously there's things like, you know, inventory happening in ERP. There's things like, you know, identifying high sales locations. You know, there's asset management. I think the AI can definitely help in all of these cases. And, you know, I think I've seen Walmart, in fact, implement machine learning AI in lots of different facets of their organization that are ERP related. And I can tell you they have been able to really optimize business processes because of it. So I definitely think it's a little worrisome for some organizations because it's still fairly new, but I definitely can say it's changing some things. So we'll see how it's going to go. But you know, before we get to any more, and I want to get to my co-host as well, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Thingst Canary. Now, I love canaries. They will detect attacks on your network way before the bad guys even know they've been caught. Now, deploy your birds and forget about them. They remain silent until needed. Get one alert via email, text, Slack, webhook, or syslog only when it matters. Thingst hardware, VM, and cloud-based canaries are deployed on all 7 continents. In fact, canaries can be set up in minutes with no ongoing overhead and nearly zero false positives. You can detect attackers long before they dig in. The canary triggers are simple. If someone is accessing your LUR files or brute forcing your fake internal SSH server, you have a problem. The canary uses deceptively uncomplicated high quality markers of trouble on your network. Here's how it works. In fact, simply choose a profile from the canary device, such as a Windows box, brand name router, or even a Linux server. If you want, you can further tweak the services your canary runs. You may even need a specific IIS service version or OpenSSH or Windows file share with actual files constructed according to your naming schema. Lastly, register your canary with the hosted console for monitoring and notification. That's it. Then you wait. Attackers who have breached your network, malicious insiders, and other adversaries make themselves known by accessing your canary. Now, there's a little room for doubt. In fact, if someone browsed a file share and opened a sensitive looking document on your canary, you'll immediately be alerted to the problem. It's pretty rare to find a security product that people can tolerate, and it's nearly impossible to find one that customers love. If you go to canary.tools/love, you'll find a selection of unsolicited tweets and emails full of customer love for Thanks Canary. I know I'm probably one of those tweets. Visit canary.tools/twit, and for just $75 per year, you'll get five canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade support, and maintenance. And if you use code twit in the How to Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. Thanks Canary adds incomparable value, but if you're unhappy, you can always return your canaries with their 2-month money-back guarantee for a full refund. However, during all the years Twit has partnered with Thanks Canary, their refund guarantee has never been claimed. Visit canary.tools/twit and enter the code twit in the How to Hear About Us box. And we thank Thanks Canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Todd Johnson, Managing Director of Nexer Group. You know, obviously, the fact that, you know, ChatGPT, OpenAI, AI solutions have been kind of integrated into business processes. It's definitely kind of mixing up some things, but I definitely can tell you it should hopefully help things out. But before we get to talking about any more of that, why would you want to bring my co-host as well and maybe give them a chance to ask some questions? Who wants to go first? Kurt?
Oh, sure. Why not? I'm looking forward to the conversation because I'm going to go in a slightly non-technical direction. As a partner, one of the things that I know you would be involved in with your customers is the cost of the solutions that come from Microsoft. And I well remember a Microsoft conference a few years ago when the then CEO said that one of their big things for the year was simplifying the licensing scheme. And there was, I kid you not, a standing ovation among, you know, the 6,000 or 7,000 people in the hall. With the move to more cloud-based offerings, more SaaS, is this something that customers are seeing some benefit from? Is it helping simplify some of the licensing and making it easier to understand what the costs of solutions are going to be before they get halfway into a contract period?
Yeah, I may have been that same conference and standing and clapping, you know, as well. Yeah, you know, absolutely. So I'd say there's still, it's certainly better. Is there room for improvement? Yes, absolutely. Overall, I mean, yeah, we've been happy what I've seen, you know, of late with Microsoft is, yeah, there is some move to simplifying it, and you know, SaaS helps that. So it's, you know, it's consumption model, and you know, I think they're starting to get away from you know, that you have to sort of build this Lego building block of licensing to get all the things that you need. I think they've heard that feedback, and then around AI. So you know, everything we've seen so far is that, you know, it's not going to be like a plus pack for Dynamics to get the AI. It's going to be part of the product. And so that's going to make it easier for us and for our clients to say, yeah, this is what I want, what I want. And, you know, if there's some feature that I want to turn on later on, it's not a, you know, renegotiation of the licensing.
Yeah, I will agree with the AI. I sat in with an afternoon with Microsoft the day before RSA. And to be honest, I couldn't quite figure out if they had decided that it was just something they were going to do or if they just hadn't figured out how to charge for it yet. But either way, AI was not going to be something that there would, as you say, be a plus back for AI. But you bring up another interesting point in your answer when you talked about the Lego block way of building contracts. With so many bits of functionality being delivered by cloud services, by services in general, there's an awful lot of Lego building block going on with sheer enterprise application functionality. To what extent are you finding that your job is helping customers just understand what goes into making a solution? Because I know that many CIOs, when they're talked to by companies that go out and do inventory, do asset management, they often have a very poor understanding of just how many services go into their enterprise applications. You know, is that an issue that you're seeing, and is that part of what a company like Nexer delivers?
Yeah, it's certainly part of what we do, because you know, customers don't come to us because they're like, hey, I've heard about these cool AI tools. How do I get some of those? No, they're trying to solve a business problem, and so our job is to put together what that solution is, which happens to include a stack of technology. And so, part of what our job is to help navigate our clients for that and to make it simple for them. In fact, in some cases, we'll actually do the licensing ourselves. And so we actually become that middleman between them and Microsoft, so they don't have to deal with that. And it gives them more, that predictability on, okay, what's this thing going to cost? For how long, for how many users. My team of, engineers are behind the scenes trying to make sure that we have all the right, building blocks together. We try to hide that from the customer where it makes sense to just say, hey, this is what you need to solve the business problem that we've been given.
Well, because of what I do, I've got to ask a security and privacy related question. It's just what I do. And so to what extent are you seeing customers come to you and ask you explicitly about the security or privacy implications of the solution that you are putting in place for their business problem? Is it something that they are very explicitly concerned about, or are they at the point of just assuming that it's going to be handled? And so if they don't talk about it, nothing will come back to bite them.
Yeah. So I give the consulting answer, which is, it depends, right? And what it depends on is sort of the size of the client and sort of, frankly, how far they are in their cloud journey. Wasn't that long ago, we'd spent a lot of time, trying to educate, customers on cloud security. The reality is for nearly any client that we come across today, if they're still, managing their own hardware, their own infrastructure on-prem internally, there's security risks in that, right? And so I think I think we're now at a point where most companies understand and say, hey, if we move you to a cloud platform, it's actually far more secure than you could ever hope to be on your own. Now, you still have to be smart about it. You still have to implement it the right way. But, with these big public cloud providers, guess what? They're much better at that than this IT organization of the particular company ever could be, right? And that conversation's gotten easier. A lot of clients they just assume that's table stakes, right? They assume that's going to be part of the solution.
Well, I'm going to ask you to take a step back and do kind of a historical. How has the industry changed? Because I used to be an engineer for American Management Systems, and I grew up in the days of the Beltway Bandit. But I'd love to hear someone else's view on how has the systems analysis consulting business really changed?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think the tools have gotten much better, right? Yeah, I mean, when I think of how I used to do, where we had to truly roll things on our own, and we did that with great success, but it was a lot of work, and there's a lot of and a lot of maintenance, and some of the solutions were difficult for customers to live with long term. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. I can see is that, and it's really just all about, moving to SaaS. It's like, okay, if you attach yourself to, the right cloud platform, You can solve your solution today, but also, you're not 6 months, 12 months from now, you get new features, you get new functions, things that come along, quote for free. It's not free, but it's because you've made that investment. You continue to get that return on that investment. Earlier in my career, when we're doing, we're writing a lot of, C sharp code and things like that, they're great solutions, but they were kind of a point in time solution. It's really hard to keep those things moving forward.
Oh yeah. I remember the days of writing a lot of COBOL. Anyway, so since we're talking a little bit about tools, what do you think? We've had a conversation about, generative AI, but let's go and talk a little bit about the no code, low code revolution. Good, bad, ugly, or just another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, and for us, I mean, the way we look at it, it's another way that we can, help solve our customers' problems, right? Frankly, could be a much quicker solution, around some things that would be more difficult, before, right? And so, we were dealing with a lot of legacy systems, a lot of integration. There could be some really quick ways to kind of wire things together, using a low code, no code, solution, right? And so that it's not something that we go off, and sort of try to get our clients to look at on their own. Is it a piece of how we go solve the problem? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and things have changed. We certainly have seen how things are going, but let's follow that question just a little bit. One of my greatest challenges, especially when I was doing a lot of military projects, is learning enough about the task or the job to be able to go and build it. So do you feel getting some of the DevOps closer to the subject matter experts is going to change this industry?
Yeah, I mean, and be clear, we're doing that today. As part of our European implementations, we're using DevOps, and we have business stakeholders, from our clients involved with that, right? And so they've got direct access. They know what the discussion is, what we're documenting in their process and things like that. There's a little bit of learning curve for them, so they understand those tools. But for us, that's been a very productive way, to engage with our customers. And I think just last week we're doing some education sessions on, like a CFO learning how to use DevOps, which is kind of cool.
So I'm going to ask one last question, and I'm going to ask you to polish up your crystal ball. What kinds of things do you think need to happen in this industry to solve things like security? We've got way too many hackers doing way too much damage. DevOps has gotten to the point where the cost has gotten high enough that a lot of corporations are saying, oh, maybe never mind. But if you had a magic wand and you could change one thing in this industry, what would you like to see change?
That's a very powerful magic wand. That's tempting. The thing that always trips clients up, that's always an issue. It's data integration, right? And that's where the security things come in as well. That's when you have different exposures, things like that. So that's one of the things that it's gotten easier to solve. But if there was some magic wand that said, for Corporation X, all the data that you've ever had is easily accessible in the new application that we just came up with. Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's a game changer. And if you do that in a secure fashion, fantastic, because that's, always getting all those dots connected and things wired correctly, particularly for a bigger enterprise, that's a really big hill to climb.
Okay, I lied. One more question, because one of our live chat room folks, Gumby, wanted a question. How has building teams changed over your long career? Presumably, WFH? And the difference is work from home and and the difference in how Generation C work have had an impact on how you build a successful team.
Yeah, no, it absolutely has changed. And like I said, I've been in consulting my whole career. You know, I used to be on planes, you know, at least twice a week every week, right? I'm not anymore. Sometimes I miss that. But the fact that we have these collaboration tools that make it really easy for people in different locations, you know, to work, closer together is huge. And so what that lets me do is, you know, we can, you know, we find the right talent. Guess what? You know, if you can get to, you know, a major airport and you have good internet, connectivity, you can be part of the team. So my team, literally, I'm based in Chicago. I have people in Rhode Island, I have people in California and everywhere in between. Doesn't matter. And our clients are more used to working that way as well. And I think it's really, you know, a combination of people being used to working from home and the right tool sets to, you know, engage with our clients the right way is that's a huge difference actually.
Well, with any great show, time flies. So, Todd, thank you so much for being here. We're running a little bit low on time, but I did want to give you a chance to do that plug, of course, and tell us a little bit more about Nexer and where people can find how to get started, maybe get in touch with Nexer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, feel free to go check us out on our website, of course. So nextgroup.com/ERP. Come find my team. We're all over LinkedIn. You know, so definitely, you know, check out our company page. You know, there's the Nexer Group company page. My team is actually the enterprise applications team. You can find us on there. And we're pretty active there, in terms of talking about things, a lot about AI discussion and also, you know, what's new and great in the Microsoft world as well. So, and feel free to hit me up there on LinkedIn as well.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my wonderful co-host. Sorry, the very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Thank you, Curtis, for being here. As always, maybe tell the folks at home where people can find you and all your work. What's coming up this week?
Well, the subscribers to my service on Omdia can find me on omdia.com. Others can find my work on Dark Reading. Go to darkreading.com/Omdia. I try to put some stuff on LinkedIn. I kind of enjoy LinkedIn as a publishing platform. I'm there as Curtis Franklin. I point to things that I write at Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA. Also on Mastodon at KG4GWA at mastodon.sdf.org. And coming up in the next few weeks, you're going to be able to find me out in the real world. I'm going to be doing the Splunk conference in Las Vegas in mid-July. And then in early August, I'll be at Black Hat USA and DEF CON, both in Las Vegas. If you're going to be there, let me know. Would love to have a chance to say hello in real life. And I'm always up for hearing what members of the Twyatt Riot would like for us to be talking about next.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Brian Chi. Thank you again for being here, Chibert. What's going on for you in the coming week? What could be behind you?
Actually, tomorrow night and Sunday. Well, actually, tomorrow day and Sunday, I'm actually going to be again at the Orlando Science Center. This time, we're going to be doing MakeFest. We're going to be showing off some things. I'm actually going to be showing off my 3D printed spectrometer. So instead of $10,000 for a visible light spectrometer, you'll be able to print one for under $100. And I'm eventually going to finish the curriculum targeted at middle school kids for them to use the spectrometer and do water quality analysis. Ought to be fun. Anyway, I brag about some of these things that they're doing. I actually just posted a picture from back in 2000 from the Interop Atlanta show where a whole bunch of my ex-students were sitting around at Charlie and Barney's in Atlanta singing karaoke. Lots of fun. Anyway, I throw a lot of what I'm doing on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. And I'd love to hear your ideas on what we should cover. I'm especially interested in, you know, what kinds of threads you're interested in, because then what I can do is try and book guests to fulfill and, fill in the blanks on these different threads. So, you know, Mr. Johnson obviously helped us talk about, you know, one of the questions about consulting and systems analysis and more detail about the Microsoft world. I'd love to hear more of your ideas, and we do have ideas coming in from all over the world, and I would love to hear them. So anyway, you're also welcome to throw email at me. I am Cheebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv, or you can throw email at twit@twit.tv, and we'll hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Cheebert. We also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show and get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There it is. There you'll find all of our amazing back episodes. Of course, the show notes, the co-host information, guest information, of course, the links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, there next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version and your video version of your choice and listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications, because we're on all of them. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you know what? Another way to support the show is definitely Club Twit. That's right. It's a members only ad-free podcast service, and it has a Twit Plus bonus feed as well. And you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. Now, there's a lot of great things about Club Twit, but one of them is also the exclusive access to the members only Discord server. I'm on it right now. There's also, you know, obviously channels for every show, but there's lots of other great channels too that you can be in there. There's cooking channel. There's also, you can chat with hosts, producers, separate discussions, special events, lots of fun stuff. So definitely join Club Twit. Be part of that movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. A Club Twit also offers corporate group plans as well. That's right. It's a great way to give your whole team, all of your teams, access to our ad-free tech podcasts. And the plans start at 5 members at a discounted rate of just $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like there. And it's a great way for your IT departments, your salespeople, your tech teams to really stay up to date with all of our podcasts. And just like that regular membership, you can join the Twit Discord server and get that Twit Plus bonus feed and all the special events as well. Now, if you want, there's also another option. That's right. You can also get your family plan as well. It's only $12 a month, and you get 2 seats with that. And then, of course, $6 for each additional seat. And you get all the advantages of the single plan as well. So you have lots of options. So definitely check out Club Twit at twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you want to impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers. Definitely give them the gift of Twyatt, because we talk about a lot of amazing and fun tech topics on the show, and I guarantee they will find them fun and awesome as well. So definitely check it out at twit.tv/Twyatt. Now, if you have already subscribed and you're available, you know, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time, that's right now on Fridays, we do this show live. Go to live.twit.tv right now in your browser. There you can see all the streams that we do. And of course, you can come see how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, all the banter before and after the show. Lots of fun stuff. So definitely watch the show live. And if you can watch the show live, you can also jump into our infamous IRC Twit Live channel as well. You can get to that by going to the browser of irc.twit.tv and just log in right there. And there you can be with all the chat room characters that are in there right now. In fact, they're giving us some amazing show titles. They've always had some really great topics and questions for the show during the show. In fact, Gumby asked a question during the show this today. So we love having that live audience. Now, of course, definitely hit me up. I want you to hit me up with show ideas, topics you want to talk about, things you want to learn about Microsoft, whatever you want to do. Hit me up at twitter.com/LouMM. Direct message me there. You can hit me up on LinkedIn as well as Louis Maresca on LinkedIn. I got a lot of messages there. Really enjoy talking with people. Of course, I'm also on Mastodon, LouMM at twit.social. Trying to get a little bit more doing stuff on there as well. I got to have that. I kind of have that aggregation. I have to get it across all services there. You need to set that up. Plus, I love having great conversations. So please reach out. Of course, if you want to know what's going on during my normal work weeks at Microsoft, you can definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways you can customize your office experience to make it more productive for your organization. And if you have M365 and you have Excel, open up Excel right now and go to that Automate tab. That Automate tab is all the features that we're building, some really amazing fun stuff. Record macros, record them, edit them in JavaScript, TypeScript. You can run them in Power Automate on schedule. You can do whatever your business processes want you to do. So definitely check that out and try automation. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. Of course, thank you to all the staff and engineers at Twit. We couldn't do the show without them. Of course, thank you one more time to Mr. Brian Chee. He's not only our co-host today, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the back show bookings and plannings for the show in the background, and we really, really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Cheebert, for all your support. And of course, before we sign out, we have to thank our editor for today because they make us look good after the show, take out all our mistakes. And of course, thank you to our TD, the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt as well. He's not only our TD, but he's also a great host to a show called Hands-On Photography, which I look forward to each and every week. Ant, can you maybe give us a little tease what's going on Hands-On Photography this week?
Hey there, Mr. Lou. Thank you for the support, my man. This week, I'm actually just diving into the Hands-On Photography community and doing some listener feedback. We're going to talk about finding your photography style, because your style is not going to be like someone else's style when you pull the camera out. Just get the camera, go shoot. Let's have some fun. twit.tv/HOP.
Now, we won't tell Chris Marquardt, but I really think that your feedback is a little bit better than his. So we won't tell him, though. We won't tell him that. Thanks, Ant. Appreciate it. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.